Are you ready for this?
It's your cricket pod blast. Let's go around the cricket world in 60 seconds. The Empire strikes back as England score an emphatic victory over India, including storm-trooping performances from Cook, Bell and Anderson. And while the batsmen decided not to bring out the hook, Anderson and Jadeja were let off one, as they were acquitted of any wrongdoing, and the whole of Twitter proclaimed justice had been done, despite none of them being present when the incident took place. Just as India thought they were free from the jaws of Plunkett, they spot a fin coming towards them. As Stephen finds his way back into the squad and in domestic T20, we have our lineup for finals day. As Surrey's Roy the Boy destroys Worcester Rapids, Jordan Clark parks Lancashire's arses in the semis as they squeeze past Glamorgan, Fat Samet's Nottingham are robbed by another convincing performance by James Vince, and the Bears mark their territory all over Chelmsford as Ravi Man is no match for the ever-living Varun Chopra.
Hello, it's your podcast. As ever in the studio, we've got Ross and Phil, and stepping in at the last moment, as always, willing and loyal, like Ross's new puppy, Pablo.
Yes, Pablo.
It's Ed Kemp in the corner. Hello, Ed, Pablo.
Hello, happy to be here.
Good, I'm very glad. Okay, England, India. Everyone's very excited because we won for the first time in the year. I have to confess to being 6% happier than I was before we won. I've calculated it.
That's a good uplift.
Thank you.
How did you feel about it, Phil?
Maybe even 7.5-8%.
Ooh.
But then I'm starting from a lower base than him.
Oh, I see, yeah.
We all recognise that.
That's true.
I was, and this sounds hyperbolic, but it's not. I enjoyed and was more engaged with that cricket match than I have been in any game of cricket, probably since Melbourne 2010, was the last time I cared as much about what was going to happen to the England cricket team.
Why?
And for a man who is famously a little bit ambivalent about these kinds of things, I've seen a lot. Mm-hmm. I've seen too much. Mm. I was absolutely engaged with this. Why? Good question. I've been mulling it over myself.
Tell me.
But
delayed answer to my question. Why?
Hold on a minute. Because it is a tricky one to nail down. But I think certainly there's an element of vindication for Cook and for those who supported him. Now, I was one of them.
Yourself.
I was one of them.
Yeah. Yes.
But I genuinely found the reaction against him from certain parts of the Twitter sphere and from
I thought one thing I said on Twitter is that he declared a little late for my liking, but that's, you know,
that's like a mini
offence.
I thought that was the perfect declaration, but anyway, we can come to that in a minute. But there's undoubtedly a sense of vindication on that part, and I felt a little bit kind of compromised and muddied by the whole Cook saga myself, and so there's a base part of me that kind of thinks, well, up yours to those who wanted to take him down. I'm delighted for the man, he's a decent and honourable man doing a bloody difficult job at the moment, and it's been a nightmarish 12 months, as everybody knows, and there are reasons over and above Alistair Cook's integrity and Alistair Cook's qualities or otherwise as a cricketer. And then there was the Mo Ali issue, and Mo Ali coming in there, again, the kind of the full-time part-timer. I think he's proved a few people wrong again on that one. And it's just great to see a cricketer that is so wonderfully charismatic and stylish come out there and do the business. I spoke to him as well on Saturday.
Of course.
And he's in good shape.
Good, because the pod blast, I mean, is it wrong of me to point this out? It's not.
No.
The pod blast has been championing Moeen Ali
from the beginning.
From the very beginning.
The beginning of the pod blast, not beginning of him.
Yes.
His
that
existence.
Would have been, what, 27
yeah,
years
how
ago?
How could we do that? You can't blame us for not doing that. But we love Big Mo. He's terrific. He's stylish. He's fantastic. Some people criticised him again, even on that last day, because he didn't turn it much. But you see what he does with the ball. And, you know, like it or not, say they played him badly or not, he's doing something with the ball that people find
purchase.
Very difficult.
He puts enough purchase
on it. He's got reps on it.
All right, let's leave aside the revometer and Wasp and all of this nonsense. And Ed, your highlight of the last Test match in India, before we jump into the mindless speculation about selection, which is what the listener really wants.
Let's
try and be a little bit content focused, just for once. Some substance, Ed.
Well, it was. There were a few things about the first day which I really enjoyed. I was lucky enough. I was there down at the Aegeus Bowl.
No need to boast.
He's born lucky.
First of all, just a quick aside was the selection of Big Pankaj Singh, who had a shout out last time out.
Yeah, your man.
Yeah, exactly.
Indian Martin McKay.
yeah, he's changed from Martin Bicknell to McKay because he looks quite a bit like McKay. But my highlight on that day was Alistair Cook going to 50 just after lunch.
Was it as special as Cook said it was?
Well, it was the reaction of the crowd. And and I wrote about this in the piece that I did. Was this? It was just such an effusive reaction by the whole crowd on their feet, really roaring. You could just—it was. I've never had that sense so much that like a whole crowd and all, you know, and beyond.
So it wasn't
with
just
one
spin.
Player. Absolutely,
because
no,
I
the
wondered
public
when
were
I
with
read
him.
That
it was only some of the media, really.
Right? Yeah. There we are.
There were the odd shout in the second inning, particularly of "Get on with it," that sort of thing. Was that directed at the Indian fielders, or was that directed a little bit at Cook?
You, they just you mean in England's second inning?
Yeah, they just did. They want to play a couple more shots, or was it just
this? In a nutshell, is what winds me up about it all. England were 205 for 4 off 40 overs when they declared at the perfect time to give themselves plenty of time to win the game. Balance at one point in that 40 over knock was 3 not out off 16 balls, and there were people lining up on Twitter having worked out his strike rate and typically up in arms, incandescent, because Balance was 3 not out off 16 balls. 10 minutes later, he's 25 not out of 25 balls. Mm.
Is it Twitter versus England? I wonder whether there's a bigger picture here. There's caged remarks all the time from the establishment about Twitter.
Yeah.
I've been on Twitter. I have to say, I suppose we're part of the Twitterati, Ross, in the sense that we tweet.
Yes, yes.
And we only follow cricket
of course.
Tweeters.
Yeah. Yeah,
but there are considered and then there are reactionaries. You
know? Well, I'm not sure there are that many reactionaries. On most of, I'd say the vast majority of what I read on Twitter all the time is a lunatic Cook supporters who irritate me because I'm not a fan. So I'm sorry about that, Phil. It's a confession. I wanted to get out there keep going. Not as a man and a batsman, fine, but as a captain, I'm not a huge fan. I think Twitter gets a bad rap sometimes, but we're going to be doing a bit of media review a little later in the show, so maybe we'll jump in then.
Just on Cook then, okay. You're not a fan of his tactical nous, strategic insights and approach? So you say not as a cricketer or as a man, so only as a strategist, as a skipper.
Yeah, I think I just fundamentally want a little bit more from a captain. I want to feel a little bit of idolatry almost, you know. I want to feel a little bit like he's a god, he's a cunning mind. And with Cook, hand on heart, there are captains who play our Sunday second friendlies who have, to my mind, got more of an instinct and a feel. And I know he did very well this game, but I watched Plunkett bang it in from round the wicket at, I think it was even Lords on that pitch against Rahane. And I don't mind that for, I don't know, 20 minutes maybe? 30 minutes? Mm. What was it? I mean, it was pushing 45 minutes, wasn't it? Mm. And something is wrong, and I think it's not Cook's decision to bowl that way, but I think he's got to learn to say no to the people telling him to do that nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And that means probably Saker.
Yeah, to a degree.
Maybe it's the bowlers.
Jimmy, it is a good question where the blame actually lies for those questionable tactical decisions that we can see, and I'm not disputing that they've taken place. I was at Lords when, you know, they were going around the wicket on the green one after an hour and a half. I was at Lords when he opened up on the fourth morning with Broad, who was knackered and left Plunkett grazing in the outfield, despite him having blown them away on the Saturday night. So I was there seeing these kind of odd, questionable decisions. I wonder where the responsibility truly lies on this one. You know, Broad and Anderson have, 700 international wickets between them? Probably even
500
more.
500 test match wickets now?
Yeah, they're okay. So, yeah, international wickets, you're looking kind of nearer 1,000 wickets between the two of them. Mm. They are experienced and strong, forceful characters. If we are going to criticise Cook's approach, then we have to criticise the other senior players as well. And we have to wonder about what Peter Moores is looking at as well from the balcony, as well as Saker, of course. For me, and I'm looking for this, but for me, I thought that there were lessons learned as evidenced by the way that he approached the game at the Rose Bowl, or the Aegeus, whatever we call it these days.
Please come on, Aegeus.
Sorry, Hampshire boy. Sorry, but it's the Aegeus. I thought his declaration was perfect. I thought the way that he spoke after Lords, as well as after Southampton, was excellent. And the key thing for me is that the absolutely crucial thing about a captain, over and above, you know, 3 slips, 2 gullies and 2 short mid-wickets and changing it around every 3 overs, the key thing that any captain needs, do you want to play for him? Are you committed to him? Are you loyal to him? And every single one involved in English cricket is.
Well, here's my question for you then, Ed, on this one. there were, after the defeat at Lords, a list of characters basically going on the record in a way that almost suggested that, you know, it was a big decision for them to do it because it was so significant. Boycott, maybe not quite so surprising, but what was it? Botham, Atherton.
Calling for his head, you mean?
Vaughan.
Was it Vaughan? Well, yeah. Vaughan saying Owen Vaughan, Morgan. Stewart. I think Vaughan succumbed to syphilis. I'm not sure what's happened with him. I find him very entertaining, but Owen
softening
Morgan.
Softening of the brain.
Yeah, something's happened. Yeah. I don't want to misquote him, but did NASA jump on that one?
I'm not sure.
I think NASA stepped back from it. But you're right, Stewart, Atherton, Vaughan, obviously.
Boycott.
And Botham and Boycott, they all said, you've got to go. Well, Boycott was particularly offensive.
Yeah. I say this as a lifelong admirer of Atherton to a disturbing level. Almost.
Yeah, by the way. Yeah.
I really disagreed with something that he said, which was that an absence of other candidates was a terrible reason for keeping someone as captain. For me, the decision on whether to fire someone or not does not exist in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. And if there's no one better, which there isn't, there's no real viable options other than Cook, then that clearly comes into play when you're considering whether he's the best bloke to do it.
Very true.
Depends how complicated you think captaincy is, I suppose. I tried it for 20 minutes when our captain was late a month ago for the first time since school. I almost had a meltdown.
That's really hard.
It's complicated stuff, let me tell you. I bloked on a bloke. I thought I'd make a statement. I put on a chap who hadn't bowled for a couple of years, but I thought he was handy. He went for an absolute ton, almost lost us the game. It was a nightmare.
So that tells us a lot, doesn't it, I think, Al? That in a nutshell.
I can only understand this world through the prism of my own experiences, Ross. So yeah, I accept the fact Alistair Cook's having separate experiences.
Yeah.
But I can't meet Alistair halfway.
No, he has to come to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think that sometimes you just look at that cabal of ex-captains and it's a little like watching, it's a little like getting your dad round while you're doing DIY. There's five other blokes on the radio saying they would do it better. And why are you doing that? Why, you know, don't stick. You know,
how
any man with. Yeah, exactly. Any man with DIY sitting around with another bunch of blokes will tell you that they would do it completely differently. Yeah. And they'll all agree with each other in a very simpering way that they're brilliant and you're rubbish. Right. And I think actually that they've got a lot to answer for in terms of that's the prism through how so many people read that game. And the tide is completely created by them. If you weren't to listen to the crowd and Twitter, it does have a voice of its own. Hello there. We're back. And we're going to have just one tactical change. We're going to allow ourselves one change that we would make to this England team for the fourth test.
Yeah.
Let's start with you, Alex. What was the one change you'd
make
to
the
11?
I was really hoping you wouldn't come to me first. Can I defer?
You're going to defer?
If someone else is ready, I'll happily defer because there's a lot of things that I want to tweak in order to get this argument right.
Let's speculate. Phil, are you ready?
Finn for Jordan. Finn for Jordan for me.
Yep.
How pleased is every single decent England cricket fan to see the big man back in the squad? He went through all kinds of nastiness in Australia. I was able to actually witness it firsthand a bit here and there. He was working for us as a columnist and he was going through all kinds of bad. So to see him back and to hear Fraser say that he's ready and that he's back to his best was great. Little plug, texted him today and he got back and he said, you know, I'm just feeling really excited about it and really appreciate everyone kind of backing me throughout. This is not the time to go into what he went through, but I mean, it was a horror show. And so to see him back, it's a totally sentimental decision. I don't know if tactically it actually adds up. Mm. If I was looking at it coldly, I'd probably be minded to bring Stokes in for Jordan. But I'd just love to see Finn let loose at Old Trafford, where you hope it plays to type with a bit of pace and bounce, and just throw it to him. See how he goes.
I think he really could get the nod as well. I mean, I think Plunkett's been really unlucky because he's all that he's done to get back into the
field. Got injured at the wrong time.
Exactly. Yeah. But someone tall and fast is likely to be favoured at Old Trafford.
Tell me about the pitch here, because I think I'm a little confused about Old Trafford. In my mind, and it's maybe, you know, back in the day, it's a spinner's pitch.
Well, traditionally, it was the best pitch in the country, really, for good cricket because it gave assistance to fast bowlers with a bit of bounce, but also the spinner, including bounce, which is also important, as well as turn. And it's still seen broadly, in the, I mean, maybe not to quite the same extent it was, maybe sort of 10 years ago, but I think it is still seen broadly in those terms.
Two spinners?
So, no, I wouldn't. I mean, Phil's change, I would definitely consider making. I think maybe there's an argument for bringing Stokes back in. It seems like change for change's sake, but the one that I might say is stick him in for Wokes, maybe. But
I thought Wokes did well.
He did do well. He did do well.
And he looks but like he's got a solid action. You, no, I appreciate that. Obviously, Jordan struggled a little bit. It was slightly odd to see him struggle for confidence. You know, it was almost like for half an hour.
He said that he's used to playing just constantly and he's not very good and he's going to have to learn. He was saying it's a fault of his own, that he's going to have to learn how to go basically fallow for periods while he's being rested or the international calendar is working that way.
This
is a guy who wants to bowl overs.
He's an athlete, isn't he? This is the difference.
He said to me, there's an interview with him in the upcoming mag, and he said how at the beginning of last season, the thing that really benefited him was he played first-class cricket back in Barbados. So he'd been playing proper cricket for a couple of months, but by the time he came into the start of the season with Sussex at the start of 2013, you know, bowling for months and months on end didn't bother him last season one bit. You know,
is that a management failure then? I mean, sure, can't you work that out before it all goes wrong?
I don't know. I think we're splitting hairs a bit. I mean, he bowled the week before for Sussex and took four for in the second innings. I'm not sure about that one, really.
Okay, Ross, your change?
Well, I think Jordan's a really good player, and there's an argument for keeping him in, but we tend to, when people fall apart a little, give them a rest. I'm all for that. I think sometimes people should be given a rest rather than playing them again and again. I would probably go for Finn again if we were going to go further afield, maybe someone that's not even involved.
David Masters.
Yeah. I would have liked to see, had Anderson, and this is getting wild speculation, been out, I would like Onions to have come in because he's been waiting for that place for years.
Yeah, but he's not been playing,
but he hasn't been playing so well and he's not in form at the right time.
England's unluckiest cricketer.
Yeah, exactly. Other than Will Gibman, who I'd also suggest could be in there, but I'd go for Finn.
You're all absolutely bonkers. The idea of dropping Jordan after one game when he's already been unnecessarily dropped once, it's the worst of what used to happen.
Stokes is England's best young cricketer.
It's a bad problem. I really don't like this dropping one game.
I don't have a problem with a core of 15 or 16.
Yeah.
And horses for courses and a little bit of rest and recuperation here and there. And if you're not quite on it, then, you know, you step aside. No. I don't have a problem with that.
Kerrigan for Broad. Broad needs a rest at some point. They've got to bite the bullet. I don't know how many more games. And I think they should play two spinners at Old Trafford. And I think he knows it. And he is best place to do it. At some point, they have to blood him, despite Moeen's performance in the last game. They need at least a second spinner in the stable in case they freaking tour India or something.
Agreed.
That's interesting. It's very interesting.
All roads lead to Ravi Patel then.
Yeah, I think possibly. Have you got anything to say about Ravi Patel? Young Middlesex player, not many people know much about him. He's in the A team. He looks like he's got very handy action and he looks pretty solid. Do you know any more about him, Phil?
I do, but I can't tell you now.
Oh, okay, wow. I've only seen him in
one-day cricket. Yeah. I've been massively impressed. Massively impressed. There's something... You can tell a spinner a mile off and there's a kind of a fizz to the delivery and the trajectory is, it has a life of its own with a good spinner.
For the listener, Phil is making the arm twisting movement.
The universal gesture of left arm round.
That's what he's doing.
We all do it. Yep. NASA does it on the telly all the time.
That's right.
You can't resist it.
Phil Tuffin describes it as just opening the door.
Oh, that's nice.
Just turn the door around.
Lovely image. Imagine that, listener, if you will.
I've seen one of the best left arm rounds in the business, which is Felix, your mate, from the Maccabees. Yeah.
Canny bowler. Shout out to Felix.
Very canny bowler. Very nice left arm round.
Gets that jingle, Felix.
He doesn't mind that.
Yeah, come on. I would say, just as a callback on that, I very much disagree with continuity for continuity's sake. It's something that's ruined Jade Dernbach's England career, arguably many other cricketers, and set back Chris Wokes a long way into his career, I think, because he played too many white ball games when he wasn't ready to. That's why I think that they perhaps shouldn't bring in someone like Kerrigan, maybe even when they said he was going to have a time out of the game. I think he shouldn't have been dealt with so harshly in a way. I think maybe they could have kept him on.
He would have been very quick to judge on Kerrigan.
Very quick to judge. But having made that judgment, maybe he does need the requisite amount of time out of the game. But we shall see. And I think Kerrigan could work
at Lords. He's in the squad for the Aegeus Bowl.
Yeah, he was. Yes, at the Aegeus.
Okay, what about Robson? Anyone got a view? Out. Boycott wants Carberry in.
I interviewed Boycott last week.
Yeah, oh, how was he?
He was kind of irritatingly charming, actually, for an hour or so. I mean, brutally rude for the first few minutes of it as well. He just looks at my beard and says, "What the hell's that?" straight away. But to be fair, it was a very interesting interview. You know, Boycott is Boycott. I was apprehensive. I think he's obviously a slightly peculiar bloke, but he was very interesting, actually, and difficult not to warm to.
Media Watch. Now, I don't want to get sucked into the whole Israel-Palestine-Gaza situation, but I have noticed during the course of it that there's been as much coverage in the British media of the way it's being reported as there is almost about the incident itself. And the same can be applied to cricket. I thought I'd have a little bit of a look at the media coverage that's going on at the moment.
It's a light link. Nice.
That's very nice. Yeah, quite political.
Thank you. And I want to start with a favourite.
Yeah.
Very good.
Clever.
Richard Hobson of the Times.
Yeah.
Hobzo.
Deputy cricket correspondent.
I know him well. Never met him.
So I think he's got a rogue streak. Yeah. I've been following this for a while, and I just want to give you a couple of examples and hear what you've got to say. This is the beginning of his article entitled "Lord's Pitch Remains Shrouded in Secrecy" from July the 17th this year, about the Lord's Pitch just before the India Test. "Like a good time girl hitching her skirt just an inch for passers-by, Mick Hunt allowed those at Lord's just the occasional tantalising glimpse of his pitch yesterday."
Nice.
First line. Nice. "Like old a good school, time girl hitching her skirt."
Quite Victorian.
It is, isn't it? I wondered about Hobbo.
Kind of Nancy Sykes.
Yeah, that's exactly what I
thought. I'd pick that one. I thought it was a very odd image to get kicking off with. But
it's
anyway,
good, doesn't it?
Yeah. Following up, July the 30th, Joss Butler serves up goods without fanfare, and he's talking about Joss, and he says reports that he is the first Joss to represent England are erroneous.
Ooh.
Actually, I'm going to pause there for a second. Is there another Joss in the England team at the moment?
Another Joss?
Because there's a Joss, Joseph. In fact another Joss. There's Joe Root.
Joss Root.
He is the 8th Joseph and 3rd wicketkeeper of that name to win in Spurs. There are even 2 Josephs in the current England team. And this is where Hobbo goes off on a slight tangent. One of the octet, good use of the word octet, chap called McMaster, preferred to be known by his middle name of Emil. He's an interesting cove, as his first test match at Cape Town in 1889 was his one and only first-class appearance, batting at 9 and did not bowl. So he played one test match in his entire career.
Wow.
Extraordinary first-class career. Well done, Hobbo, on that one.
Emil McMaster.
Yes. It's extraordinary name, isn't it? Really?
Thank you.
I want to pick up on a slightly newer story that's got a bit of coverage.
Is this still Hobbo Corner?
No. Now we're into the... Oh, it is still Hobbo. I beg your pardon.
Yeah, sorry.
This is the Times. I'm showing the picture of Gary Balance in the nightclub late
at night. Does it just say Gary Balance ledge? That's what it should say.
The headline is Gary Balance avoids action after night out. Tends to suggest that he just didn't get lucky.
Yeah, that's I like that pun.
So, July the 17th. Gary Balance will not be facing disciplinary action. Blah, blah, blah. He said, can I just take a moment here? Can anyone here name the club that he was photographed in?
It's
beyond good. I'll give you a clue. It involves a box. What kind of box?
Oh, the mystery box.
Almost.
Pandora's magic box.
Pandora's box. It's the name of the club in Nottingham.
The ECB have opened Pandora's
yes.
box.
He said, "I'm not a cricketer tonight. I'm a drunken bastard and I'm absolutely fucked."
I think if you declare yourself not a cricketer, then you're exempt from any punishment.
Like tonight, Matthew, I am not a cricketer. I'm a drunken bastard.
So there's a picture of him topless and my eye just drifted down the page.
Oh, right.
It did.
Oh.
To the comments section. And it's not exclusive to the Daily Mail. This is now the Times.
Yeah.
And I thought maybe with the Times, you know, you'd have a couple of retired generals in Tunbridge Wells, or maybe that's the Telegraph. Instead, an absolute sort of basket case of the absolutely strange. Daniel Murray says at 1444, "Why is it that the resolution of the photos is so much better when women do this in bars than when men do it? Don't men deserve equally good photo resolution for their topless trots of mirth?" Gary deserves better.
Oh,
is that English irony?
I don't really know. Afterwards, someone
it's an
says.
Ironic feminist, that guy.
Yeah,
I'd rather have any article or story about Natalie Imbruglia, fully clothed, of course, rather than a drunk, half naked cricketer.
He's torn, isn't he?
This guy's interesting. Oh,
and I thought, there's a man that's just absolutely locked into 1996 and he can't leave.
Good
can
time.
He?
Good time.
Somebody underneath says, me mistake. Too, any time.
Another Imbruglia reference.
Next there. Person down on Natalie Imbruglia says, quote, clothing is optional, which I think is a bit saucy for the time.
This has really gone off piece, this conversation, and then, this thread, isn't
it? Well, can I finish this up? Because it's the last bit of media watch.
They're walking away in droves out there. They're drifting.
I am curiously reminded of the electronic duo Coil, whose singer John Balance, with one L, died after falling downstairs, probably in an inebriated state. An unfortunate surname, if there ever was one.
Oh,
I've never heard of electro group Coil.
No, you're right. I've never heard of Coil.
I think obscure comment of the year award goes to you.
That's very good.
Trevor Barr.
I think that all shows that reading the newspaper comments is very much opening Pandora's box.
Yes, indeed. All right. Yes, very good, Ed. Very good. All right. So media coverage, generally, we've covered it.
We've done it. That's covered.
Our coverage has been covered. I read to the listener.
I want to end, by the way, that AOC's been on fire. We just keep getting it right all the time. And often we get it wrong. Famously, the AOC curse, we see someone on the front cover, they're arrested, or they die, or they break their arm, or whatever.
Yeah.
We've had a belter of a couple of months. We just keep getting things right. We're ahead of the curve, and we're nailing it.
Well, can I pick you up on that?
So there you go. There's your media watch.
Stokes.
Stokes what?
He was on the cover.
And?
Now he's been dropped.
Oh, he punched a locker previous to me.
Well, the cover was after the locker. Yeah.
So what? So hold on. So a man's not allowed to fail just a couple of times. just a couple of times. Play a couple of bad shots.
I think it's the back pattern.
And hold on. You're contradicting yourself here because, you know, we all recognise what a great talent he was over Australia, and then he plays two test matches. He's dropped.
Other people did.
And you're thinking this is...
I thought they made a lot of it in Australia just because he was the only good thing happening.
Because on a broken minefield at Perth against... that man, he smashed 100.
Yeah, I just think it was so extraordinary that it was just fluke.
Wow. Brilliant.
I think the five ducks speak for themselves.
Brilliant.
I think that was pretty... Hang on, are we still on?
Yeah, we're still on.
We're actually on.
Quickly, while we're on media watch,
because
normally we discuss the new edition of All Out Cricket over the sort of jazz at the end, but we're in media watch.
That's there.
And, well, obviously, you know, I've seen the front cover on Twitter today.
Yeah.
And I had to retire and just spend some time alone with it.
I appreciate that.
It's one of the sexiest things I've ever seen.
Me too.
Yeah. So just describe, paint the picture for us here.
Yeah, what's the front cover look like?
Oh, well, the front cover itself is a sensational amalgam of hot yellow and monochrome with the one and only Mahendra Singh Dhoni on a Ducati or a Harley Davidson bike.
Can I pause
with
there?
His own personalised number plate. Ooh. Looking like an Asian Jimmy Dean.
If any of you are wondering who MS Dhoni is, he's the guy who James Anderson accepts he called a fat. So there we are.
Jesus Christ.
Not looking like that at all on the front cover, though. Looking trim.
It's another bleep you're going to have to edit yourself.
You're going to have to add that bleep in there. But, you know, he's a journalist and he's merely delivering.
I'm merely quoting.
Tonight, Matthew, he is a journalist.
I'm not a journalist.
Anyway, listen up, this is important. So, five years since Dhoni last agreed to do a magazine interview. He's done one for us this month, and the incomparably suave and delightfully, surprisingly humble Mark Nicholas came on board as our guest editor. I didn't know him very well. I didn't quite know how it was going to go. We ended up having a scream of an editorial meeting that afternoon that Kempy was in as well. We talked about Dhoni, and we've been trying to get Dhoni for a year and a half, and we got kind of within touching distance, maybe. Mark turns to me, taps me on the shoulder and says, "Let me speak to Dhoni."
Two weeks later,
he's in a chicken shop, chicken restaurant, not Ravi's, chicken restaurant in Nottingham. Dhoni and Nicholas, all kinds of people at the window, just kind of banging on the window as those two talk about life, love, the universe, the army, bikes, pressure, love. A lot about love.
What is a chicken restaurant?
Don't focus on the chicken.
He likes that, doesn't he?
I'm hungry.
And what's come out is 3,500 stunningly evocative and impressionistic words from Mr. Mark Nicholas. I thank him, officially I thank him for setting this thing up. It is a stormer.
Oh. It's very much a Hello Massive moment.
Is it? Mm. I can't wait
for this. Crackerjack doesn't even do it.
No. That's lovely.
Each word evocative, each word sexual. Talking about a T20 roundup. Well, Alex, both you and I were at the Oval in attendance for a terrific matchup between Surrey, little Surrey, poor little Surrey. Who would have thought they could make it through against the gargantuan might of Worcestershire Rapids?
Nice try, Ross. I'd never seen Roy in the flesh before.
Mm.
I was a long way away from him.
Yeah,
and even from that distance, I could tell that he was something special.
He is pretty special, that Jason Roy. I mean, as I think Gary Wilson said after the match, it was a difficult pitch to bat on, actually, as both sides attested to, for everyone other than Jason Roy. And this is what he's been doing all season, while other people sort of stutter to sort of 30s. He's blasting 60s and 70s. And he was the difference between the two sides, as well as all the other obvious differences.
Yeah, we're going to move on to the other three quarterfinals, but just quickly on the T20, a word about the experience. Without meaning to be churlish, because we were actually there on free tickets, I thought it was very, very odd that it was Saturday at 2:30, Surrey versus Worcestershire.
It was a real shame.
And the crowd was sparse, to say the least.
Because Friday nights have been fulsome.
I don't know actually why it wasn't a Friday night, because once you throw... I mean, the entertainment seemed to be some guys dressed as jockeys wearing sunglasses.
That was very good.
Playing drums.
Don't diss that.
That was worth it.
That was
the rest of it, not so much. It was a weird situation.
It wasn't through the entertainment.
You don't get as very long to organise a quarterfinal, basically.
Yeah. It's not that at all. It's the TV thing. Friday night, they had the game that was cancelled, but that's your TV. Saturday afternoon, you've got your TV game. Saturday evening, Essex kicked off at 6 o'clock. There's your other TV game.
Yeah, well...
another TV game on Sunday.
I also wonder whether it's the Oval as venue. It's very big, and if you have a lot of people there, and it still feels empty, whereas Essex was rammed.
They've got near to selling it out, though, when it's at the right time. Saturday afternoon, you're pushing it a little bit, really, to get it going.
Friday night's the time for cricket. Support your local cricket club, people. Get yourself along. Fill up those grounds.
We're very grateful. Surrey Worcestershire was awesome. I'm obviously, as a Surrey fan, delighted with the result. Mm. It's Jason Roy just blew my mind. He could hit it any freaking direction he liked. He was as good as I've been led to believe.
Yeah, he was very good.
He obviously plays the 2020 stuff for England next month. He may well play getting his way into the 50-over side as well.
I think so. I mean, he left Peterson in the shade, who, by the way, I've been meaning to say for a while, boy, would a few people love to write about the form of Kevin Peterson if it was in existence. But sadly, he's made it very easy for Messrs. Cook and Lobbit. Well, he really has, though. I mean, he's the man who dish out a few meows more than anyone.
Yeah, it's interesting as well that you talk about Roy and Peterson. Roy is this kind of prototype Peterson character. He's an absolute clone of Peterson, and even down to the delivery, the mannerisms of his post-match interview, he has that kind of bristling South African passive-aggressive thing going on that is pure Peterson. And Peterson's taken him under his wing, from what I gather, and he's kind of shown in the ropes. He's got the talent to go quite a long way, as Jason Roy.
All right, lovely. Okay, so that's Surrey, Worcestershire.
And while you speak about your home county, I'm going to speak about Hampshire.
Lovely.
And another guy at the top of the order who just cannot stop scoring runs, which is James Vince.
Yeah. Classy player.
Vincey.
Yeah, in fact, just get him in the England team. Get rid of Sam Robson, get Vince in there. He's a great, you know, everyone makes comparisons with Michael Vaughan. He's a beautiful player to watch. But also, like, he's captaining that side. Impressive. He feels like he's been around for ages, and he's still only 23. You know, this year, even in first class cricket, he's averaging over 60. He's in the England Lions squad. He's got to have a chance of getting involved pretty soon.
I think he's next man in, isn't he? James, next man in, Vince.
I think he's got to be. Yeah, I think he has to be.
All right, well, a consensus here at the Pod Blast.
There we go.
And I also just want a little word on Essex as well. My team,
Essex, Warwickshire.
Essex, Warwickshire at Chelmsford, and to carry on the pattern, Varun Chopra comes out to bat, an old Essex lad, another émigré from Essex, brilliant player to watch. I mean, you talk about Vince, who's probably the stylist in English cricket, Chopra is right up there as well, I think. And he made a good 80, and Ricky Clark made a brilliant 70, and Essex, yet again, kind of gave it away, really, and it's a telling story year after year, quarterfinals or semi-finals, they just fall short. Jesse Ryder went out, smacks a full toss to mid-wicket, Ravi did the same, and that was it. And Essex were long gone, really, 30-odd defeat. And it's disappointing for that club. They're a strange, strange team. Jesse Ryder said beforehand, this is the best team I've ever played in, the best 2020 team, including New Zealand, that he's ever played in. And you look at the talent and you look at the way that it stitches itself together, it makes sense. And yet, for whatever reason, they always tend to come up short. They've never won it and they've never actually been in a final. They've been at finals day, never in a final. You look at the talent that they have.
They really should have.
It's baffling.
I watched a weird passage of play. I caught a bit of it in the evening. It was Rhys Topley bowling to Ricky Clark.
Mm.
Ricky Clark was moving over towards the off stump and picking him off with a pickup, basically, up over the leg side. And then the next ball, Topley went a little wider, and Ricky Clark goes even wider and does the same thing. And by this stage, Ricky Clark's about a yard outside his off stump. And I'm just thinking, just swing it at that base of the leg stump, you know. But, you know, what do I know? But it was funny to watch him think, it's so obvious.
Yeah.
He's gone.
That's 2020 cricket, though. The sort of tactics on view for everyone to see, I think, is one of the things that makes the game quite brilliant.
And Clark merits a mention. I mean, what a cricketer he is.
Ricky Clark.
Yeah, well, this is one of those moments, again, and it happens a couple of times a season when you watch him and for about 10 minutes you wonder if he is the greatest player that England have never used. Yeah. George De Bell, our man George. Hello, George. Hope you're well.
Hello, George.
He insists that Ricky Clark is just a god, a genius.
Yeah.
And he's blind as a bat when it comes to Warwickshire, but he does absolutely assert that.
Mm. So that comes on to our final T20 then, which is Lancashire against Glamorgan.
Yeah.
Glamorgan having done so well last year, not making it to finals day. What do you think of Lancashire? Because there's a bit of a brouhaha brewing in Old Trafford about the performance of the team, but their T20 side is doing well. Is it Parry, the sort of already half-forgotten man of the England T20 setup?
Well, I think he made the Lions, didn't he, just about, which was quite surprising, but he has made it in there with Ravi Patel, amongst others, who I think will probably...
Who's the all-rounder from Lancashire in the England days that's in now as well?
It's Tom Smith, who's a really good
player. His record is brilliant this year.
Really good player. And they, when you look at their lineup with all-rounders and specialist bowlers, they really have a good T20 setup. They've got Tom Smith in there. They've got Jordan Clark, who bowled a three-wicket maiden, which... you can't turn your nose up at. And they had a lot of players who were coming in there bowling really, really good spells. And it was their bowling completely on that day.
Are
not
they the
their
dark
batting.
Horses, though, for the finals day in Lancashire?
I think they're the best bowling side.
Best bowling side? Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Who have they got seam-wise?
Clark is a seamer. Tom Smith bowls right arm.
Are they going to have Anderson?
They could have Andy Anderson back, ECB willing.
They've got to release him.
Yeah.
And there's a pleasing amount of Lancashire lads in that side, isn't there? Same as the one that won the championship.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to make you all quickly make a call. Finals day. Those four. Who's it going to be? Us. Ed.
Got to be Hampshire. Back on finals day again. They've got the experience.
Yeah. Ross.
Surrey, incredible resources, and Jason Roy.
Okay.
Genuinely, I think Warwickshire are going to win it if Wokes and Bell are allowed to play.
Okay. And I'm with Surrey as well. I saw enough there. And I think Dilshan at any moment could explode as well. I think they were lucky to get away with Dilshan.
He could combust.
Although, I hear that he might be injured.
Oh.
Oh, well, that's blown that one then.
Yes. All right. So that's the T20
roundup.
Searing
insights.
Generally speaking, this season, though, T20, just as the 50-over competition is getting going, T20, a success overall? Is that what you're hearing?
Yeah, kind of, and no, really. From what I gather, the attendances have been up, but not massively up, and not as up as they were hoping that they were going to be. When they shifted it, and I think it was a good move, shifted it to Friday nights, Friday nights. I still think the age-old problem, too many games, too many counties, but it's better than it was last year. And to be honest, a lot of it passes me by, hand on heart. It takes place in the evenings, and I've got loads of great things to do on a Friday night, so I don't often tend to watch the games. But you still get some belters, and the four quarterfinals were great, really.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, anyone else with a verdict?
I think the Friday nights have worked really well, and actually you've got to compare that not against what happened last year, but what might have happened this year if they'd been on the old schedule.
Yeah.
And actually the Friday nights, talking to the counties, they're really pleased with them, and it's all about getting people through the door, the counties, and they've been reasonably successful at doing it.
I think the bell's been banging on about Friday nights for a very long time. So George has won the day again, hasn't he?
Well,
I think
he is Mr.
Well.
Friday night.
Do you know, as we record at the moment, the Switch Hit are also recording.
Wow, that's exciting. Face off
on a virtual
through the airwaves.
One day there's going to be a history of broadcasting, and they're going to talk about this auspicious moment.
Wow, imagine that.
Not really.
Mm. Okay. Mm.
So, we go out some smooth jazz. Just very quickly, Jamie Thompson, fellow player of mine in my cricket team yesterday, made a point I hadn't heard before.
Go on.
The irony in Jadeja-gate of the BCCI complaining about no footage on the stairwell when they won't accept playbacks on the pitch. DRS-gate.
Well, not into it, are they? I'm glad all that's over. We can think about the cricket, can't we?
That's right.
Although you were thinking about sort of a sexy matchup between Jadeja
and
Anderson.
James Anderson's already appeared in Attitude magazine. Jadeja's a good looking man himself, so perhaps we can have some kind of spread where they
just a fun mud wrestle to get it over.
Yeah.
And nice in that our upcoming cover out on Wednesday, folks, is possibly the most homoerotic cricket cover you've ever seen.
Lovely. Tony on a motorbike. Anything else from you?
I just want to add, I want to dedicate this show to Ed Kemp seated on my right and me, who we both made noughts on Saturday, completing a tri-north pair.
Oh, lovely. Well done.
Very good.
So well done you and well done me.
It was very special.
Here's tears to next week.
Next week, listeners, join us next week when we'll be talking about England again, won't we? What are we talking about?
Always.
A victory, what do you think?
They're back.
They're back. The Empire Strikes Back. Tweet us.